Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Sarah Gon. Let's come to our first news story of today, and this was a headline that immediately caught my attention, although it turned out to be a little bit clickbaity. It was in the Daily Maverick, and the headline was, "We cannot prosecute our way out of corruption, National Prosecuting Authority boss Batoy." Now, considering that I think there's been a lot of criticism leveled at the head of the NPA, Shamila Batoy, that she has not been aggressive enough in prosecuting people for corruption, I think the assumption I and some other people may have had is, oh no, what is this? What could she possibly be saying? But it turns out she was actually saying, I think, something pretty reasonable. She says, quote, "There is an awkward truth at the heart of almost all anti-corruption efforts underway today in countless countries across the world. The truth is, prosecuting corrupt public officials and private sector players, even the most senior ones, won't end or deter future corruption. It would be comforting indeed to believe that prosecuting 50, 100, or even 1,000 beneficiaries of corruption and accomplices would vanquish corruption and restore integrity. But while prosecutions are essential, and I emphasize are essential, it is not enough. The truth is, we cannot prosecute our way out of corruption." She talks on the need for establishing a culture of accountability, of people being taught to do the right thing, committed ethical leadership, she talks about, as well as various reforms. And I think there's definitely something to this. She talks, for example, about the Italy's Clean Hands operation in the 1990s, where she says a network of corrupt and convicted politicians was exposed, and this led to hundreds and hundreds of arrests, including two former prime ministers. However, just as it looked like Italy was about to now triumph against corruption, the prosecutions drove the infamous Silvio Berlusconi into politics, and he proceeded to go on and become prime minister of Italy and was able to protect himself from corruption charges. So I think this definitely could be overstated. It's very important to send people to jail for corruption, but it's not enough. You need to do a number of other things. I mean, one of them seems to be, firstly, you just reduce the opportunities for corruption. You take more things out of the state's hand. You reduce the level of discretion that individual players in the system get. So, you know, you can't have a license granting entirely at the discretion of a minister, for example. You know, all those sort of things. Basically, if you reduce the size of the state and the discretionary powers of politicians, you go a long way to reducing opportunities for corruption. This is why I often say that when it comes to socialism, corruption is not some unfortunate defect that creeps in. It's actively encouraged by the centralization of economic decision-making in a few hands. Sarah, what do you make of this?
Look, I think this is absolutely correct. I mean, given how crime-ridden our society is, and I know you recently discussed mafias, construction mafias and things like that, I think one of our main problems is the fact you actually need a political class, and by this I'm clearly referring to the ANC, that really is prepared to deal with corruption, is prepared to deal with the Zondo Commission findings. And while many words have been uttered, there isn't really a sense that it's coming from there. So it's something that I think is going to, that area is going to be it's going to be difficult not getting the buy-in you really need in the political classes. It also means that, you know, I can understand the problem with prosecutions taking time to process, but, you know, we come back to my old favorite issue, and that is within government in particular, and, you know, we can talk about the private sector, but let's keep it with government. You know, you can't, you've got to process disciplinaries, you've got to fire people, and that may be actually be more effective than whether you ultimately get a conviction, because the system's overburdened and is not going to be underburdened for a very, very long time, if ever. But what you can do is get people who understand and know that you don't need a high level of proof to get people out of a system, get them unemployed, get them, you know, make it, don't be shy about it, do not give people good references just to get them out of the way. Just boot them out of the system. But it is about those things. It's about, and as you said, with the, as has been said about the construction mafia, I mean, it's unconscionable that Jacob Zuma, of all people, who's been charged with a criminal offense, has managed to spend 20 years delaying the inevitable, managed to get that 30% of local, you know, using local people in construction projects. Well, I mean, you know, one can see through that immediately, but it's, you know, it's a hook on kind of what you're doing for the community. Of course, you're not doing anything for the community. You're just ensuring that the bad guys pretend to represent the community, and it gets worse from that. So it's a whole lot of things. And obviously, one's talking about culture, but it's also about, you know, educating children as to at schools in the context of why corruption destroys a society. It's got to put together a whole range of things, and it probably requires, you know, one doesn't have any real sense of where the initiative with government and private sector has gone on dealing with, you know, disastrous police system, and, you know, what the state is. Has there been any improvement in intelligence, in the gathering of intelligence after the Zuma era administration destroyed that? So it is multi-pronged, and I think she's absolutely right on this. But ultimately, a lot of it depends on the people who do the employing, in other words, whether they've been the ministers or the DGs or the whatever, getting rid of people without putting them on paid leave while they process their disciplinaries. They've got to become more robust, and they've got to find or access proper skills to coach them in it, and to, if necessary, perform some of the functions for them while to change that culture.
Exactly. You need a kind of systemic response here, because if you just, you know, I think we sometimes get carried away with these stories that, you know, if everyone implicated in state capture went to jail, that would be a good thing, but it wouldn't really actually solve the problem. Or if we just change this one law, if we make the Municipal Financial Management Act, which is already very strict in how it allows you to spend money, a little bit stricter, none of these things by themselves would work. You kind of have to do all of them together. And part of that is also a social thing of having just, I think, more effective social shaming of people who are involved in corruption. There needs to be a cost sort of at all levels. You need to face jail time. You need to face unemployment. You need to face a social stigma for being involved in corruption on I think multiple layers. And I think you know, it's kind of on all of those, actually, unfortunately, at the moment, that South Africa is not doing great at doing is not great at. I think corruption has become more and more, particularly during the Zuma years, of something that is stigmatized by normal people. But I do think that we still have a ways to go on that one. And definitely on the prosecutions and the writing of our laws and just the sort of managerial culture, we have a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, let us move on to our next one. This is another initiative being launched by us here at the Institute of Race Relations. Our colleague Chris Patterson, who is an occasional guest on the show, has been talking about the collapse of water infrastructure across the country, along with some of our other colleagues like Anlu Kiewa. And as part of our efforts to kind of get to grips with the scale of the problem and also help push for accountability from municipal officials, we're launching a campaign which will encourage people to send details of particularly water problems to us, and then we will send them on to municipal officials. The campaign, there will be a link in it on the YouTube comments. People can go to ira.org.za/campaign/stop-the-leaks, upload photos and a description of what is happening with the water infrastructure in their municipality. I believe we also may have plans to be developing an app which will allow you to do the same thing, to help build some of the pressure on government to repair water infrastructure, and also to you know, help us build a dossier to be able to use an advocacy to say, you know, here are the problems with our water infrastructure, and we're not talking in generalities, here are the specifics of all over the country, And I think that will go a big way towards helping accountability. Sarah, what do you make of this?
No, I certainly know I'm a great reporter of potholes and water leaks. And in Joburg, the water department is actually pretty good at fixing stuff that's reported to them. I think part of the problem is that we don't have a culture of reporting. People assume that somehow it either is what it is, or somebody else will have reported it, or if they even think, consider it that much.
Or they've given up. There's no point.
And look, there's no guarantee that reporting anything to a municipality that just doesn't have the time, the money, or the expertise to do anything will necessarily get it done. But it's certainly one good step, is apart from all the information gathering, is that the culture of reporting is, in all fairness, you can't always expect the municipality to know where the problem is. But if they do, it helps to put pressure on, and if they can do something about it, they might. I think we have to start from the premise that we owe it as citizens to tell the people who are providing us with the service that there's a problem. That's what, we can't assume they know about every problem. And the more they know about, they may not be able to fix everything, but certainly there's a better chance of things getting fixed and issues being highlighted with more specificity that need attendance at a greater government level.
Indeed. Our colleague Chris Patterson says at the end of his media statement on this, the IRR aims to connect communities directly to officials responsible for the crisis at local government level. The time for box-ticking community participation is over. With the 2026 local government elections on the horizon, South Africans should be ready to use the best accountability mechanism available, their vote. And that's something I definitely agree with. Last story for today. This is some more shakeups inside the MK party, this time from the province of Mpumalanga, where the leader in Mpumalanga, Mary Paddy, has allegedly, according to IOL, who are not always the most accurate of news sources, has allegedly been fired from the party over accusations that she was in the process of hiring hitmen to murder one of her rivals within MK. The party has confirmed to IOL the move, saying that they initially asked her to voluntarily resign, and then she had not done this after 3 days, so they fired her. She's accused of allegedly hiring hitmen to kill rival MK party member in her province, General Tuff Mdluli. Speaking to the Sunday World, Mdluli said he had opened a case against her after receiving death threats and voice recordings reportedly discussing plans to kill him. He accused her of manipulating MK's internal lists to make sure that she got a position in the legislature. She has, of course, as one would expect, denied the accusations. We'll have to see what comes of this. But another interesting detail from this story is that Mary Paddy, the person who's accused here, is apparently a prominent figure in the trucking business and president of the Truckers Association of South Africa, and has been accused within that organization of a misappropriation of funds, bringing the organization to disrepute and non-compliance with leadership requests. Sarah, what do you make of this?
Well, the cynic in me says, well, one down and 1,500 MK members to go, given the profile of a number of the very senior people and the certainly as far as criminal charges go, if not convictions. I think the lesson to be learned from this is, first of all, don't ask for resignations of anything. Do not ask for resignations. Rather, at the very least, perhaps suspend a person's membership pending clarification, because obviously you can't assume until charged that even convicted. But if you wait till for conviction, therein lies a problem of itself. But for example, at least say suspension until the party's satisfied that they are or not, the grounds are or not baseless, but. There is a sort of sentiment that says, the MK wants probity. I certainly think what will really be served is dealing with her role, if it's nefarious, in the trucking business, is probably more important than whether she's a member of MK.
Yes, no, I think so too. But it's kind of, you know, who knows if these accusations against her are true. But it's interesting to note that MK seems internally to be just as crazy as you'd expect it to be. And this is exactly the sort of thing that's going to continue to weaken the party, I think, or not necessarily cause it to fall apart, but prevent it from growing into what it could be, which is a sort of true challenger for power in the country in some way. And I think MK's fatal flaw is just that it's so chaotic internally. It's always fighting with itself. It's always got resignations. It's always got problems.
Yeah, I think the problem that it cannot possibly probably undermine it eventually is the fact that it is founded by a man who essentially really catapulted the destruction of the economy of this country. And so you can have all the appeals to integrity and probity you like, but it just doesn't wash.
Right. He also began in many ways the sort of collapse of the ANC from its high point, where it was getting, you know, 69% of the vote in 2004 down to 40% now. Yeah, quite the turnaround of fortunes.
Well, it's a bit like, you know, is it a requirement of membership that you have you're doing nefarious things?
Yes, it's just not allowed to be nefarious things against your own side, apparently. That's the limit. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope that you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the fund us button.